Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown!
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! The Bills win it in overtime!
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown here in Buffalo. We are pleased right now to have with us through Skype, we're watching him, you can't see him, but on the radio, Dean Blandino, Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst, former NFL VP of officiating from 2013-2017. Dean, Steve, and Chris here in Buffalo, thanks so much for coming on. I know it's not too much is going on, but thanks for taking some time to be with us.
Yeah. It was good to get to have something to do today, you know?
we were laughing off the air. I said, like, there's been times where it's been so great to be worthless. But I got to tell you, too, I go in waves. I've been really productive at times here, and it really has been a nice respite. Have you been holding up okay under the pandemic? Have you found any silver linings?
Yeah, you know, there have been silver linings. Obviously, everybody's healthy with me, so that's number one. But with all of, you know, whether it's Zoom or Microsoft Teams, all of these video conferencing platforms, we're actually getting more done now with training our replay officials on the college side, and where you don't have to travel and get into a room together. You can just, you know, hop on a video conference, and we're doing it every week. And it's been a real good process.
Hey, I got to ask you about that. We've heard, and you heard it even on our update just a minute ago, the 4th and 15 thing that the NFL was thinking about as opposed to the onside kick as another alternative. Can you give us some insight with your experience as to what they might have been thinking about? Listen, it's too early for this. We don't want this to happen. We're not set up for it. What are the reasons for that, and how did we get there?
Yeah, I think this was a proposal from the Eagles, and it got a real push late recently because I think there's some people at the league office that like this idea. They feel like it's an exciting play, and it could infuse some excitement to the end of the game, and obviously, you know, help us, you know, keep the games closer, which obviously is the goal. I think there was some debate in the room. You know, the membership met virtually, and I think there are just some people that are fundamentally opposed to this type of a change. I mean, this is a drastic change. You think about the onside kick. The onside kick was a tactic that teams used within an existing rule, right? That they didn't have to change anything. It was, look, you could get the ball after it goes 10 yards, so let's try this tactic and let's try this technique. I think there's some people that are opposed to creating it, having a major change, and then what are the unintended consequences? You know, you think about a 4th and 15, now you have, you know, a 5-yard holding penalty that results in a first down or illegal contact. Maybe it's there, maybe it isn't. So I think there's still some work to be done on this. I know that I think they were pretty much split in the room 16-16 on this. So you got to get 24. So in order to get this back in front of them, there's some work to be done.
Do you think it, Dean, do you think it's rooted primarily in the fact that this is a down where the ball can be advanced an unlimited number of yards and the onside kick is strictly trying to get possession back? You can't advance the ball. Do you think that's the biggest rub there?
I think it's part of it, absolutely, right? Like you said, because fourth, it's just a regular play from scrimmage, so you could get 10 yards, you could get no yards, you could get a touchdown versus the onside kick where you can't advance that kick. So I think that was part of it. I think penalties was part of it. You know, how complicated are we going to get the timing of the play, how many times you can use it? There's just a lot of variables. And, you know, is it worth it? Is the onside kick, you know, you looked at the onside kick last year. Obviously, one team, Atlanta, was very successful with it. They've got a kicker that is is really adept at it. But, you know, it was a 12, 13% play, which is where it's been historically. And I know they were concerned in 2018 because of the changes, and it dropped, you know, down to about 4 or 5%. But there's still a chance. It's still an exciting play as an onside kick play. So I think there's a lot of variables to it.
We're talking with Dean Blandino, Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst, also former NFL VP of officiating. Dean, I got to ask you this, too. One of the things that's been hovering out there, particularly since the XFL was out there, and you mentioned yourself, the NCAA has some of the sky judge stuff that is out there. The NFL doesn't go there. One of the reasons I heard for this was they didn't think they had enough time to train these guys last year, right? And they were undermanned. They didn't have guys who would qualify to do this kind of thing. And that's is that still maybe the real reason they haven't implemented it?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the last year, right, the coaches were all in favor of a sky judge. They voted 32-0 at the league meeting for sky judge. The competition committee and the vote went a different direction. We ended up with pass interference review. You see how that played out. So we're back to sky judge. Look, if we weren't ready a year ago, then we should have been getting ready, because this is coming, right? This is the sky judge will happen in the NFL at some point, and they've got to figure it out. They're going to experiment in the preseason. There's quality people out there. There's quality people on the staff. You got to figure out when you can use it, how you can use it, and who's going to do it. And they've got to figure that out, because you're going to see a sky judge concept in the NFL at some point.
I got to believe, Dean, there's got to be a strictly defined set of parameters there, because you can't have the sky judge. The sky judge has got to be looking at what the head ref is looking at, I would think. His eyeballs have to be in the same place. He can't be looking at some backside corner away from the play who's maybe mugging somebody. It has nothing to do with the play, but under the letter of the law, it's defensive holding downfield. He can't be flagging that, saying, "Oh, that touchdown's no good because we got this guy over here, you know, 30 yards away from the football," right?
Yeah, no question. And right now, the way the experiment is set up, it doesn't deal with any kind of subjective foul. It doesn't deal with holding or pass interference, anything like that. It's still reviewable plays, catch, no catch, fumble down by contact, you know, a boundary stepping out, and the sky judge can provide input to the on-field officials when the on-field officials ask for it. And they got to do it before 25 seconds is on the play clock. So it's quick. The on-field officials have to recognize an issue, ask, and then there has to be the video available for the sky judge to even provide input. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But right now, you know, there's no mechanism to review pass interference or holding. That's all in the hands of the officials on the field.
Dean, how much backlash or pushback do you think happened with all of these rule changes and every rule that they considered this year in the NFL? How much pushback did they feel because of they blundered the pass interference reviews last year? I mean, they absolutely botched it from start to finish. It was pushed through. It was something that we hadn't seen for a long time and probably won't see for a while because of how it went. How much of that was in the room, you think?
I think it was. I think, you know, we talked about it last year that there was going to be unintended consequences, and the way they put that rule in, it obviously, yeah, it's a big play what happened in that championship game. But if you start changing rules for one play, this is what we end up with. And we saw it play out. They never could find a consistent standard. And I have never seen in my time a rule change go in for 1 year and it doesn't even come up for a vote the next year. I mean, that's unheard of. You heard Troy Vincent say it was an absolute failure. That definitely is part of the thinking. When you're sitting there as a, you know, as a club president or an owner, and you're thinking, what happened with pass interference review? Do we want to put something else in that could be even worse? So that's definitely part of it.
Dean, what about the new guys named to positions in the officiating office? You know, longtime head ref Walt Anderson, senior VP of officiating training and development. Perry Fuel, the former coach in the league for a long time, is now handling officiating administration, quote unquote, day-to-day operations. And then Al Riveron, still senior VP of officiating. What does the addition of a guy with Perry Fuel's coaching resume perhaps due to maybe serve as a sounding board for officials, a different kind of voice that's readily available? How might that help?
Yeah, I like the idea of adding a coach. We've done that. When I was at the league office, we brought in coaches that weren't working that year on a consulting basis, and they were invaluable. They would sit in with us. We had Jeff Fisher Ken Whisenhunt, Jim Schwartz, Lovie Smith. We had a host of coaches come in and spend a season with us and look at film with us because they see the game from a different perspective, and they obviously understand the game on a level that officials don't. And it was invaluable to listen to them, use them as a sounding board. So I like the addition of Perry. I think he's a smart guy, and I think he'll provide value. Walt is a hard worker. He's a smart guy. Al Riveron's still going to be in charge of replay. I think there's work to be done there. And, I like the idea of having a team approach. But, again, at the end of the day, you have to have someone, you know, where does the buck stop? And that, I think, is going to be the question a lot of clubs ask. You know, who do I go to? Who's ultimately going to take the call from Bill Belichick or Bill O'Brien or, you know, Brian Flores and answer that question? I think that remains to be seen.
We're with Dean Blandino, Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst. Dean, I got to ask you about some of the specific rule changes they did implement. We've talked about what they, you know, the sky judge is not there. The 4th and 15 is tabled. Now, it's one of the things that, and maybe you can get specific because we're having a hard time getting our mind around it, the multi dead ball fouls and also the enhanced defenseless player protections on kickoff returners and punt returners. But the one I want to ask you about is the touchdowns and turnovers that are always reviewed, but now they're also going to add the plays that were negated by penalty. What is the, you know, best worst case scenario that the negated by penalty caveat adds to that scenario? I don't get it.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. This was in last year, a 1-year change, and then they just made it permanent. So all that means is, you know, the Bills score a touchdown and there's a holding penalty that takes the touchdown off the board. Well, if there's anything reviewable on that play, it's not a coach's challenge. Because of the touchdown that was scored on the play, it goes to an automatic review. So it takes it out of the coach's hands. It probably happened maybe 10 or 12 times last year. I don't think this is a major deal. It's just that turnover, that score that happens, but then, oh, wait, there's a flag. It's coming back. If there's anything reviewable, it would be an automatic review. The coach wouldn't have to challenge it. So it allows the coach to save that challenge.
The one that Steve mentioned was the one that was puzzling to me with expanding the protections for the defenseless player on the returns. There's already, it seems like it's describing the Halo rule that already seems to exist. Is it an expansion of that? I couldn't make heads or tails of it.
This is not, look, player safety is of the utmost importance. And this is a minor change. This is the kick returner, right? The punt returner that's sitting back there that doesn't call for a fair catch. The rule before said as soon as he caught the ball, he was no longer protected. You could hit him in the head or neck area. Now what this rule says is, okay, he catches the ball, but he still has to have time to protect himself. So he has to become a runner. So it's just extending that protection until not the moment he catches it, the moment he now becomes a runner, has the ability to ward off or avoid that contact. That's how it's been officiated for years anyway. It just made the rule, the language in the book, in line with how it's being applied on the field.
It just seems to compromise the timing of, you know, a gunner coming down the field if you read it a certain way. And I wonder if they have to adjust now and – you know, you see a guy screaming down the field. He finally beats the jammer on his play, and now he's got to put the brakes on and then hit the gas again. I don't know how realistic that is for a gunner.
There's no question, and that was the reason behind, you know, not extending that protection because, right, the punt returner has something that the receiver doesn't, right? The punt returner can call for a fair catch. He has that ability. The receiver doesn't. So people felt like, okay, if it's that close, call for the fair catch because once you catch it, you're going to get hit. This does put a little more pressure on the gunner. And, you know, obviously Steve played that position.
Yeah, Steve, speak up.
He would know better than us. But it does, you know, I'm sure they can adjust. They're tremendous athletes. But now the timing is going to be you got to wait another second or two before you can make that contact.
Right. And I think a lot of it has to do with the body contact. If the guy catches it, crouches down and gets his eyes down and can flinch or, you know, cover up before the hit gets there, that's what you're talking about. That's really the moment. And you say a second or two, it's actually probably a quarter or half a second at most. And it's just, you know, you'll know it when you see it. And that's kind of the way it should be officiated and probably will be. I got the one rule that got changed that we all knew was coming was the multiple dead ball fouls. We saw it. The New England Patriots used it against the Jets to run the clock out in a game they had. And then in the playoffs, Mike Vrabel turned the tables like we've never seen it happen to Bill Belichick. He did it to his old coach, Bill Belichick, and the Tennessee Titans took foul after foul to run the play clock down and the game clock down to shut that game out. That was, for a lot of fans, having it done to Bill Belichick was pretty delicious. but we all knew it wasn't going to last, and this was a pretty obvious change.
Yeah, it was. You know, that's coaches are really good, whether it's Coach Belichick or others, that are really good, that are finding, you know, ways to do things within the rules that are legal to gain an advantage, right? That's the goal. You're trying to gain an advantage, and it was a smart play. The league, closed that up, and they said now if you take that false start or that delay game, the clock is going to go on the snap, and you can't take another 25 seconds off the play clock, and which makes sense because we don't want, you know, the couple situations where it happened. You know, there's a minute and a half to 2 minutes of no action, no football in a close game, and that's not what we want.
Right, and I get that too. I got one last question for you, Dean, and it has to do with the current climate around officiating. Certainly, nobody in there who's more than just a casual fan is holding the officials responsible for what happened with OPI, DPI last year, and the reviews and how silly it was for the coaches to try it, even when it by letter of the law was pass interference. Nobody wants that called. And with the scrutiny that's on officiating today with all the replays and everybody's an armchair official, how do you strike the balance between letting the guys play and making it fair and watchable for everybody out there?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's been the challenge for many years. It's the scrutiny is so great, and it's hard because you sit there and you say, okay, we want the fouls to jump out. We want to make it have an impact. And you officiate that way, and the game flows, and everybody's happy. And then you know, the coach sends in 15 questions and said, you should have called this. You should have called this. You should have called this. And then if you call too much, they say, well, we're being too strict. These are ticky-tack fouls. So it is a balance. What's amazing is that you look at the numbers, and with all of the rules that have been added over the last 20 to 25 years, player safety rules, all of these other changes, we're still averaging 15 to 16 fouls a game. So when you think of it in the long run, you know, that has still been a historical number since 1975. And there's been a couple of years, a couple of down years, maybe you're up a little bit, but that's been the range. So the officials have done a really nice job. It's just, like you said, the intense scrutiny that they're under, and everybody's an armchair official, and everybody has a DVR at home and high definition. And they say, well, what about that? And what about that? You know, you played the game, you know, go out. I say, when I watch a game and I see a replay and you go, what, man, how did he miss that call? Go watch it on the sideline live. And you go, how did they ever get one right? It's amazing how good they are. And it's just part of the deal. And we just got to continue to strike that balance.
Dean, before we let you go, we do have to ask you about a certain Thanksgiving incident that we read about in the NFL office between a microwave and the replay system. What the heck?
So here's what happened. You know, we're trying, it's Thanksgiving, everybody, we got a bunch of people that got to take time away from their families. And that's what you do, right, when you're in the NFL.
Yeah.
And so we invited some of the families in, and we were going to have turkey and all the good stuff. And we ended up taking a microwave from one of the kind of the pantries, one of the, you know, the break rooms in the NFL. And they just happened to plug it into the same circuit that I was sitting watching the game, doing the replay. And all of a sudden they hit the microwave to heat up some stuffing. And the thing just goes like, blank. And I'm going, what the just happened? And, you know, the thing is, look, we still had replay at the stadium. So the replay official was still at the stadium. So we weren't down completely, but we couldn't come to New York. And the guys did a great job getting it up and running. You know, it was down about 2 minutes. And I said, plug that microwave somewhere else, please, far away from here as possible. And we had a good meal after that.
Dean, thanks for coming on. It's been great talking to you. Appreciate your time. And stay well, and you and your family, all our best to you and your family.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
Dean Blandino, Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst. He's also former NFL VP of officiating from 2013 to 2017. And a lot of us wish he was still there.
He's aces, man.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown, we're going to take a break here. One Bills Live. and presented by Kaleida Health. What we're going to do next, we're going to go to the mailbag. We put out there a tweet that said, listen, if you've got questions you want to ask Brownie and I, we will answer. And we're going to do that right after this break. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, One Bills Live. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Just before we move on to the mailbags that people have been sending in, the mail inquiries, they've got questions for Brownie and I. We're going to try our best to answer the email questions. You can also just call us if you want at 803-0550 or 1-888-552-550. You can also go online and answer our Twitter poll for the day, what the biggest challenge is for NFL players this offseason. And if you can't catch us now, if you want to go back to us, come back and listen to parts of the show. We had Dean Blandino on just a minute ago. You can stream it live using the Buffalo Bills app. The show portions of the show are podcasted on buffalobills.com, the Bills app, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. And when we get back on TV, somewhere in the distant future, you can go back and watch those things as well. Pete Bomarito's coming up at 2:30. He's the owner, operator of Bomarito Performance System. He's the guy, one of those guys, maybe one of the most prominent guys who trains athletes, and he's doing that this offseason with a bunch of Bills guys. So we're going to talk to him at 2:30. So, Chris Brown, you ready to talk about the mail inquiries? We got it's a mailbag. It seems Okay, we'll just call it the mailbag. So
yeah, keep it simple, man.
All right, here we go, the mailbag. From the first one's for me from Kevin. It says, my question is for Steve. It's been eating at me since I heard Steve and Murph talk about it. How can you say Rob Johnson was better than Doug Flutie? Flutie was a nightmare to plan for. The only stat Johnson leads in over Flutie was injuries. The guy was a walking chandelier. The reason I say is because he was a better thrower, that's all. He might have been a worse guy. You might not have liked him. I don't even know if the team won more under Flutie or won more under Rob Johnson.
They won more under Flutie.
All I can say is that for whatever reason, for me, Rob Johnson checked a lot more of the boxes. I think Flutie was a better leader on the field. I think that goes without saying. Brad, what are your recollections about which guy was a better quarterback?
Yeah, I covered the team as the beat reporter for WGR during this time, so I was there every single day for the 3 years that this quarterback controversy dragged on. It was endless, and it completely overshadowed anything else that had to do with the team. You know, Eric Moles had
evaluation.
So I think what you had here was a superior physical specimen in Rob Johnson, who was almost 6'4" and had a rocket for an arm and could still run around and buy some time and make some plays off script. The problem was he held on to the ball too long and as a result took injuries as a result and could not stay on the field. And the number one ability in the NFL is availability, and he was horribly not available. And Flutie, to his credit, took advantage of a situation. And he was a little bit of a wild card in terms of game planning against, but I think for the teams that were able to hem him into the pocket and not give him escape routes or throwing lanes proved to be pretty effective against him. And we have to remember, the offense under Flutie was not a juggernaut offense. That was a team that largely relied on their defense. The 99 team had the number one defense in football. And so As much as Flutie kind of helped them win games and made enough plays to win, he wasn't some juggernaut offensive machine either. But he was more successful, and in two-minute drills, he was pretty effective. And his one-loss record speaks for itself. I believe he was 20-9 in his starts for the Bills, and Rob Johnson was something like 7-5.
Right.
So the proof is in the pudding on the field.
Yeah.
There's a whole other dynamic in terms of off the field,
right?
Because I don't think Flutie was as good a teammate as Rob Johnson was, and Flutie was roundly accused of being the one putting quotes in the media with anonymous sources discrediting Rob.
You think?
And that was widely
wow.
I got to tell you, Steve, the toughest thing as a reporter at that time.
Going back and forth?
was trying to get anyone to go on record and say Flutie's talking crap about Johnson. No one would do it, but everyone seemed to believe that was the case.
Right.
And, oh, my God, it was just back and forth every week. And then, you know, Wade with the playoff game, naming Rob the starter. That was a whole nother layer for the what ended up being the Music City Miracle game. And, oh, my God, it was just endless. And it dragged into the 2000 season. It was just, oh, my gosh. And the best part was Wade blamed the media. He said the quarterback, this is a direct quote, the quarterback controversy is media generated. It was not media generated. It was stoked in the locker room, and the media ran with it. The media may have expanded it, but they did not generate it. And as good a person as he was and as great a defensive mind as he was, did a deplorable job in rectifying the situation and laying out a clear and defined course going forward with those two quarterbacks, and it left the locker room in a complete quandary, and they were forced to pick sides.
Right. Okay. Well, so you did have a thought or two on which, okay. So
that was a long-winded answer. Yeah. Sorry.
That's right, though. I mean, that's
it's a fascinating part of Bill's history, though. It really is.
It is. And it was, and I think too, it's pretty widely accepted by the people I've talked to that Ralph had a voice in everything that went on that Wade did. And I don't even know that Wade was the guy who was saying, hey, I want Rob Johnson instead of Flutie.
No, that was Ralph's call, I think.
It was Ralph's call. And you know, Ralph doesn't have to apologize for that. He owns the team. He can make those calls. But Ralph had a louder voice than people gave him credit for. He was a passionate owner. As much, as distant as he was for a lot of people who, you know, he lived in Detroit and all that stuff, that guy was in it every day for the Buffalo Bills. And
In the late 90s, he was still making some appearances at One Bills Drive at the time. Not as frequently as he was when you were playing, but he was still getting out there every so often and checking out practice and the like.
Right. So there you go. So that's right. So that appreciate that question from Kevin. We've got another one here from Robin. And I've heard some rhetoric on this issue that Robin's going to bring up and is pretty interesting. What's the issue with getting Zach Moss signed? Is this an issue similar to the past where mid-round selections are often the last to be signed because they are the last to have their price set? Seems like running backs in mid-rounds are often a challenge to get signed. It is exactly what it is. Mid-round guys, here's the thing. When you get to the third round of the NFL draft, the first two rounds have some pretty specific language in the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, as to how much you can waiver on their numbers and what you're allowed to do for them. The language starts to relax in the third round. And that's why the third round guys, that's why last year with Dawson Knox, it took him a while to get signed. It's because the language in the CBA allows agents to fight a little bit more for their client and what he's going to get that season. And that's why sometimes in recent years, third rounders, starting with third rounders, it's been more difficult to sign those guys.
Yeah, they don't sign as quickly because there's some base salary that can be negotiated there.
Right.
So while you have a slotted signing bonus that's pretty much set and done, agents can negotiate the base salaries with their third-round draft choices. And the reason why that's important is because even though every player that's a rookie has the proven performance escalator, you know, for compensation, like, you know, let's say, for example, Matt Milano. Yeah, Matt Milano becomes a starter second half of the year, lights it up, has extraordinary stats that far outweigh his base salary as a fifth-round draft choice. He gets performance pool money. Well, the proven performance escalator for someone like Zach Moss is not going to be beneficial for him because, at best, he's sharing carries in what's going to be at least a two-man backfield.
Right.
So he doesn't know what kind of performance-based pay he's going to be able to get as arguably the second-string running back. So yeah, I could see why his agent is trying to negotiate maximum base salary compensation.
Right, exactly, because it's impossible, and agents know this, and players know it, and even us as casual fans would be able to understand. When you're coming into the league as a rookie, you don't know who's going to be throwing you the ball. You don't even know if you're going to make the team. You don't know if you're going to play a lot or a little, if you're going to be covering kicks or whatever, and you want to get as much money just for showing up on time and being on the team as you can, because if you have a great year, that's gravy. But the first things first, you just want to be on the team, and that's and you want to get the most you can just for that fact. So that's why all those things are one of the reasons why it takes those guys. When the language gets vague, the negotiations get more contested, and that's simply the reason why, starting with third rounders, it gets a little more difficult. Also, from a mailbag, another question from Pat. Thank you for that question, by the way, Robin. From Pat, what are the odds that Tyler Bass becomes the new place kicker this year? Also, what are your thoughts on Christian Wade? I know his age has something against him, but he seems to have a lot of athletic ability, durability, and toughness. Rugby's a very demanding game. Could he be a diamond in the rough? A couple of questions from Pat there. First, start with Tyler Bass, the kicker. What do you think, Brownie?
I think he's got unquestioned leg strength. I mean, we've seen the social media posts of him taking a one-step run-up and hitting 60-yarders. That's insane. It's like he's got a bionic leg. I think he has a chance because what he offers you is a two-for-one ability in terms of being a kickoff guy and a place kicker. What it's going to come down to for him is consistency. If he can demonstrate and prove to the coaching staff, I'm not only a big-legged kicker, I am a consistent kicker, then I think he's got a shot. I do. Mm-hmm. But that remains to be seen. The problem here is Steven Hauschka is at a point in his career where I think what you need on kickoffs is something that he cannot always deliver, particularly when you get in the second half of the season, the weather's colder, the ball doesn't travel as far, your leg strength or lack thereof is more pronounced on kickoffs. Now, that could be remedied if perhaps they go with Kari Vedvik, who's trying out for this roster as a punter but has a giant kickoff leg. And if you want to keep Hauschka, you're probably keeping Vedvik to handle the kickoffs. But if Vedvik does not prove to be a prolific punter or a better punter than Corey Bohorquez, you may have to think long and hard about Tyler Bass, who gives you the kickoff availability. Can he provide you with the consistency on place kicks? If he can, there's a good chance he's on the roster. As far as Christian Wade, you know, he's got another year to kind of prove himself and serve on the practice squad again. He is going to turn 29 years old before the season starts, I believe. And he's an interesting guy, but it's the nuances of the game that I think are tricky for him. Yes, rugby is a demanding game, but it's not as scripted and assignment heavy as football is, particularly at the running back position.
Right. And I think what will happen, my call is that my prediction is they're going to force Christian Wade probably to prove how badly he wants it. He's going to have to exhaust every concession that the league has made for foreign players, you know, and for him coming over. They gave him an exemption last year. He could be the 11th guy on the practice squad and the 54th guy on the roster, that kind of thing, or, you know, the extra guy on their team. Same thing here. He's got a roster exemption for training camp, and he could probably do it. They'll probably make him just prove that he's going to do it, and he's got to work hard and do everything he can to get on the field. And then at the end of that, they probably will, if they can, reward him with a roster spot at least for a year if he can earn it. But they're going to give him every chance to do that, but he's going to have to prove it on the field. And for the kicker, you're right. It's an interesting dynamic. You alluded to it there, Brownie. You've got to balance what your needs are on the field during a game with the skill sets of the three guys that you're talking about. It's the punter-kicker thing and the kickoff field goal thing. Certainly, it's going to be tough for somebody to out-accurate Hauschka.
Yeah,
and that's what Bass is going to do.
He had a rough stretch at one point in the season where he was missing some kicks, but you look at the way he ended the year, I think he hit his last 11 in a row, and people forget the guy nutted a 49-yarder with 5 seconds left in regulation to force overtime in the wild card game. I mean, that's a pressure kick.
That's money.
That was his 11th in a row to finish the season.
That's huge, right? I mean, so you can't look away from that. Certainly, he is everything you want in an accurate, reliable guy. Certainly, you can say, well, I don't know, is plus 50 yards. Well, the best kickers in the league are a coin flip from 50-plus. That has always been the kind of baseline. If you're above 50%, how far above 50% you are says how elite you are, because that's really what it takes.
Let's lightning round. let's lightning round these fan mailbags here so we can get to everybody, Steve. Let's try to do one-word answers for 4, 5, and 6.
All right, here we go. Medakevich, Joseph are seemingly locks to make the roster. Do Thompson, Bell, or Dodson have the best chance to get the last linebacker spot? I'm leaning towards Thompson myself.
All right, so quick answer
Thompson,
here.
Thompson, Bell,
Medakevich
Dodson.
On the roster. Voshawn Joseph I do not think is a lock. I think they think a lot of Corey Thompson. I think they believe a lot in Tyrell Dodson, who's a guy they kind of kept around even after an off-the-field incident. I think they believe he could be a future backup Mike, perhaps, to Tremaine Edmonds. So that's going to be an interesting one to work itself out. Everybody talks about the receiver competition, Steve. The linebacker competition on the back end is going to be very compelling.
Yeah, I think Dodson and Joseph are the guys that are going to be in a competition. I don't know if Joseph is there. So I think if Dodson and Joseph are the guys in the competition with Medakevich, I think both those guys make it, and maybe Thompson and Bell do not.
Yeah,
so
we'll have to see it.
We'll see. All right, from Rick. Steve, if you were elected – forget that one. It's one of those Hall of Fame crazies. From Kyle, bigger breakout candidate in your opinion, Josh Allen or Devin Singletary?
I think Josh Allen has kind of broken out already. I guess they want people – I guess they're talking about him getting to the elite level. Singletary, I think, kind of broke onto the scene last year, but can he take it another step? I think Josh has got the better opportunity to do so here, Steve, just by virtue of the fact that he's got the ball in his hand every down and knowing Devin's probably not going to be a 300-touch guy. He's going to be probably around 180 to 200 touches, knowing that Zach Moss is probably going to get a good deal of the work this year, don't you?
If Devin Singletary touches the ball 225 times, that's because he busted out. He's going to have 1,200 yards. Yeah. If he has it 180 times, it's because Zach Moss and the running game, and it's been a balancing act. But here's how it's going to work. If one of those two guys, whether it's Devin or Zach, gets in there and starts busting it up, that's the guy that gets the carries. That's all there is to it. They don't care if Devin Singletary is designated a number one or a number two. The guy who's playing well at that position gets the ball. And so if it's consistently Devin Singletary, you can bet he'll have 225 carries and Zach Moss will have 100 or 150, 125 carries. And that's the way it's going to be. He'll have less than 10 carries a game, maybe less than that even. If Devin Singletary is the guy and he's having a bust-out season, it will reflect that in the number of touches he gets. That's my take.
Yeah. All right. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. So that's our mailbag. Thanks, everybody, for doing that. If you want to get in on this conversation at 803-0550, please feel free to do that. 888-550-2550 if you're away from Buffalo. Coming up at 2:30, Pete Bomarito. He's the owner and president of Bomarito Performance Systems. If you don't know who that is, he's the guy that trains hundreds of professional athletes, thousands of youth athletes, high school, college athletes, and he's currently working with a bunch of Bills guys. He's coming on at 2:30. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Steve Tasker and Chris Brown. This is One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We just had Dean Blandino on. He went over the rules changes and some of the interesting things that are going on around the NFL and what have been going on for years with the officiating. It's interesting. You go back and listen to that earlier in the show. We've got a Twitter poll that's been going on about some of the challenges that the players are going on and what you think the biggest challenge for them is this offseason. Our poll, is it A, conditioning, staying in shape, B, no limited on-field reps, no limited or on-field reps. Team chemistry was another one that may be a challenge for them, or something else. 50% of you, 47.5% of you think it's the fact that they can't get on the field together as being the thing. They can't practice football together. That's the biggest change. Another 30% of you think it's team chemistry. You can't get together. That means you can't be friends. You can't play like a team and all that stuff. What are your thoughts? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you're outside of Buffalo, you can call us and we'll get you on the air. Brownie, we got this some tweets coming at us that are pretty interesting in response to this poll that I just mentioned. From Jack A., he says about the challenges for NFL players this offseason. He says, I trust these guys as pros to work out and keep themselves in shape. I really think the biggest challenge is not working together as a team to develop chemistry, be in the playbook with the staff, form a well-oiled machine when it comes time for camp and the season whenever it starts. I think there's a lot of that, and it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. And particularly in Buffalo for us here, we've seen this team be something a little bit different on the field together, when they cheer for each other, the sidelines, right, when their cohesiveness, right? And so if that's not there, that may be one of the assets we've seen the Bills use this to win games, not be as sharp.
You know what this tweet says to me, though? What sparked in my head when you were reading it? How fortunate are the Bills that they're not revamping their offensive line this year, and they did it last year? Because you want to talk about on-field chemistry and reps, and you were going to change 80% of your offensive line, 4 out of 5 new starters in an offseason like this? Best of luck with that. Guess who's doing that?
Right.
The Dolphins and the Jets.
Yeah.
They've revamped their offensive lines. Best of luck having that in sync week one.
Yeah, hopefully the Dolphins and Jets botch it. But
well, it's going to take time.
You can't take it for granted that they will, but the players are going to know that that's a hard thing to do, and they're going to take steps towards it. We got another tweet as well, and another response to our Twitter poll from Bills and Mets fans. A lot of us have put on weight during the past few months, the pandemic. I'm sure even athletes get bored during quarantine and find staying in top shape a challenge. I expect early play to be sluggish as everyone struggles to get up to speed. There's a lot of things working against good-looking football when the season starts, right, Browning? I mean, it starts with the guys being in shape, but another one is like the rest of it is not knowing the plays.
Or timing in the passing game.
All of that stuff, yeah.
Things like that, the finer points. But here's the thing that I think about when I read this, because I think to a certain degree this is true, and you can corroborate this or refute this if you want, Steve. The guys you got to really worry about when you're in this virtual setting are the big guys, because there's some offensive linemen that'll gain 10 pounds just thinking about a cheeseburger.
Right.
And those are the guys whose weight can dangerously fluctuate in a circumstance like this, where they're on their own, left to their own devices, left to their own food choices and workout regimen. You can police it as much as you want at arm's length in a virtual setting, but you might not think it's a big deal for one of these big men to kind of go off the wagon, for lack of a better term, for a week. But they don't do the right things for the span of a week when they're left to their own devices. They could be 15 pounds overweight by the time they come back. I mean, that's how quick it changes for the big guys, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And offensive linemen, defensive tackles, those big guys are kind of fall in two categories, Brown, and you know this. When they quit playing, they either get rail thin,
slim down,
or they turn into Jabba the Hutt, right? I mean, they turn into these guys that are like, they're so big, right?
They get sloppy,
They turn into Haystack Haynes, right? I mean, they're just huge. And so that's what they fight against. There'll be certain guys who are working hard and they're saying, man, I got to put on another 15 pounds of lean. You know, I got to get bulked or I'm not going to be able to push anybody around when the season starts. And these other guys are saying, listen, if I don't drop 15 or 20, you know, I'm going to keel over on day one. I'm going to be off the side, not being able to practice because I'm so out of shape. So it's both sides of that. And it's a challenge for either one, whichever way you want to take it. But I've seen, you know, I remember Jerry Kraft, Condo.
Oh,
He was one of those that fell into the sign that, listen, it was hard for him to keep the weight down. Condo was so big. They incentivized it so that they wanted him to play, and get this, they wanted him to be under 370. And it was a struggle for him.
Right.
It was a real struggle for him.
I think they had a similar thing for Jamie Nails.
Right. So they had this thing going on, and some of the guys we were laughing about, and he's bumming. You know, some people are just not happy if they don't get to eat what they want, right? So Jerry's one of those guys. So he's bumming. They're talking about it, you know, and everybody's kind of in it with him. You know, they want him to be successful. And they go, Jerry, tell the truth. This is a guy that's sitting at 360 or something like that, right? And they go, Jerry, so it's 30 pounds to go to 400. You go, how fast would it take? He goes, I'm well over 400 when I'm eating what I want. How fast would it take you to get to 400? You know, if they said like today, like you can weigh whatever you want, how fast would you get to 400? And he said it would take 72 hours.
72 hours?
That's what he said.
Oh my
With a straight face.
Well,
straight
I will face. Say this. When he finished playing in the NFL, he bounced around the Arena League, and I was doing Buffalo Destroyers games when right. they were here in town, and he got signed because Ray Bentley was coaching the team, and he brought Kondo on to just line up and get in the way, basically. Right. And let me just tell you, there was no nutrition plan for Arena Football League teams on the road. So we're on the road, and I'd usually eat with the players because I'm traveling as the play-by-play broadcaster, and you even did some games with me, Steve, I remember. So I'm watching him eat, and it is just
– it's mind-numbing.
It's like a conveyor belt.
It is mind-numbing.
It's insane. I don't think I've ever seen anything. You want to talk about competitive eating. That should have been his second career.
It was unbelievable.
He should have been in there with Joey Chestnut and all those guys because
it was
he
impressive.
Was under the table.
It was absolutely impressive. It really was. So there's that. All right, we're going to take a break. You can give us a call. We got the next half hour. We'll take calls from 2 to 2:30 if you want to give it to us. 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550. What's the biggest challenge for NFL players this offseason? We had Dean Blandino on, the Fox Sports and NCAA rules analyst. He had some great things to say about what's going on with the rule changes. Also coming up at the bottom of the hour, Pete Bomarito, the owner and operator of Bomarito Performance Systems. He trains hundreds of professional athletes and thousands of youth and high school and college athletes, and he's working with a bunch of Bills guys at the current time. Come back and join us, 803-0550 or 1-888-550-2550. This is Steve Tasker, Chris Browns. We're here till 3. This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Sports Radio 550 WGR Buffalo and WKSE HD2 Niagara Falls Buffalo, 98.5 FM, a radio.com station.
Since its inception, Lincoln has been an exceptional, exclusive brand. And West Hereford Lincoln is now the exclusive new Lincoln seller in the Buffalo market, with purchase and lease options as exceptional as the brand itself. Like an all-new 2020 Lincoln Corsair with heated seats, power liftgate, remote start, reverse parking aid, 8-inch LCD touchscreen, Sync 3, and more. Just $328 a month. $328. 36-month lease with $29.95 down payment plus first payment, tax, acquisition, and registration fees due at signing. No security deposit required. On approved credit through Lincoln Automotive Financial Services. Not all buyers qualify. 7,500 miles per year allowable, 20 cents per mile thereafter. Unless provided by manufacturer, lessee is responsible for all maintenance and excess wear and tear. Ends May 31st. And you can take advantage of Westher's new, safe, socially distanced curbside delivery at our location. You're important to us at Westher Ford Lincoln in Amherst on Millersport Highway, just north of UB. If you're thinking Lincoln, think West Her exclusively.
Welcome to West Her, New York.
It is not the critic who counts, not the one who points out how the strong person stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the one who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends themselves in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if they fail, at least fails while daring greatly, so that their place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Teddy Roosevelt recited this in Paris in 1910. We're Pachillo's Fitness Gear, and we believe everyone has the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot, to do their part to make a difference.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals, because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
This is an important message about coronavirus. You are at higher risk for getting seriously ill if you are over 65, if you have any serious underlying medical conditions like heart disease, chronic lung disease like asthma, diabetes, or if you are undergoing cancer treatment. Stay home. Avoid close contact with others. Wash your hands frequently with soap and water for 20 seconds. Disinfect frequently touched objects like doorknobs and light switches. Visit coronavirus.gov for the latest information from the CDC. For more, go to radio.com/stay connected.
Radio.com is helping you stay connected, no matter how you're social distancing.
Keep tabs on the latest COVID-19 news affecting your family with local and national news stations, including CNN, Fox News, and more.
Need a break from it all? Radio.com has hundreds of music, sports, and talk stations to take your mind off of current news.
Love podcasts? Radio.com has thousands. True crime, documentaries, and the highly acclaimed podcast from Brené Brown, Unlocking Us.
Listen on the Radio.com app, on Radio.com, or smart speakers and connected devices.
Here in Western New York, we can never take for granted the things, places, and the people that make our hometown great. We are blessed to have ECMC, Western New York's only level one adult trauma center. Please help them build their new trauma and emergency department that will provide state-of-the-art care and save even more lives. Every donation, small or large, will make a difference for someone fighting for their tomorrow. Visit supportecmctrauma.org.
Are you connected? Because over 200,000 people have already connected to National Grid to get storm info and safety tips. To connect, go to ngrid.com/connectny or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. National Grid, here with you, here for you. Are you connected? Because over 200,000 people have already connected to National Grid to get storm info and safety tips. To connect, go to ngrid.com/connectny or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. National Grid, here with you, here for you.
Nobody works harder to bring you the latest Bills and Sabres news than WGR. Every story, every play, every day, all year round. Over the air, online, and on social media. Nobody works harder. Just like Losi and Ganji, workers' compensation and personal injury lawyers. Working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers.
The official voice of the Buffalo Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550 and WGR550.com. Sports Update.
Now with the 2019-2020 season over for the Buffalo Sabres, it's the time of year where the players and staff can reflect on the season that was. Sabres captain Jack Eichel, one of those players who expressed his frustration, saying that he is, quote, fed up with the losing and that he is not in the greatest place with what has happened in the last little bit and it has worn on him. You can check out more of what Eichel had to say on our website at WGR550.com. As for defenseman Rasmus Ristolainen, he knows his future with the Sabres is once again in question.
Before this last year and this year, I really enjoyed working with Ralph. Our team took some strides, but I feel like it wasn't enough. And when you put so much hard work every summer, you work hard in every practice, it makes it even more frustrating because we weren't even close again. I want to win if it's in Buffalo or somewhere else. I feel like when team doesn't get to the goal, that is playoffs, I think you need to make some changes. And if changes will happen, I know I'm one of the first ones probably who's going to get traded.
You can hear more from Ristolainen and check out his comments by checking out WGR550.com and on the radio.com app. You can also hear from Jeff Skinner, Sam Reinhart, and Ralph Krueger. Yesterday, the NHL announced the season award winners for the 2019-2020 regular season. Alex Ovechkin and David Pastrnak share the Rocket Richard Trophy with the most goals in the NHL this season. Edmonton Oilers forward Leon Draisaitl takes home the Art Ross Trophy with the most points in the league, while the Bruins come away with the President's Trophy as the league's top team in the regular season. And in football, NFL owners approved 3 playing rules and 1 bylaw change on Thursday while tabling the 4th and 15 alternative to the onside kick. You can get the complete details of that on the story from Sal Capaccio at WGR550.com. For WGR, I'm Joe DiBiase. Be sure to get breaking sports news here first. Download WGR on the radio.com app and select push notifications. Breaking news on the home of the Bills and Sabres is brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference. Go listen at radio.com/Dell.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown!
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown!
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We've been having this Twitter poll go on. What's the biggest challenge for NFL players this offseason? 47% of you say it's the fact that they can't practice on the field together. Seems a little bit obvious, but there are some other choices as well. 30% of you say it's team chemistry. Something about the Bills team that made it pretty special in the last couple of years has been the chemistry they have displayed. You think that's the biggest challenge to get that back without being together? And then, of course, another option A was 19% of you said it's just trying to stay in shape. Those three point or 4% of you thought it was something other than those three options. Give us a call, 803-0550 or 1-888-552-5550. Speaking about challenges for the players, a lot of players really kind of they kind of seek out, and it is a vote of confidence, and it's a little bit of affirmation of what you're doing in your career when you get acknowledged by not just your peers and opposing coaches, but fans and national media members as well. And Pro Football Focus came out and said that Micah Hyde, the Bills safety, is the most underrated player on the Bills roster. And then conversely to that, NFL Network's Cynthia Freeland, who's an analytics person, said that Jordan Poyer was the most underrated player on the Bills roster. Pretty interesting that both those safeties come across, and for a secondary that's pretty accepted as a really good secondary, both safeties are rated separately as the most underrated player on the team. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, those two guys have been pretty instrumental in this team ranking second and third against the pass each of the last 2 years. And they've made an awful lot of plays on the ball. In fact, Poyer, I believe, since he joined the team in 2017, is either first or second in total turnovers forced. So he's been around the ball an awful lot, and I think they complement each other extremely well. As a matter of fact, I think you could make the argument, and I'm not going to pretend to be an X's and O's guru to completely confirm this, but I would say that Hyde makes Poyer a better player and Poyer makes Hyde a better player. The sum of the parts makes them more valuable, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that. And plus they're both so intertwined in the success of the secondary that has been so good. And they've been also, they're the secondary is the heartbeat of a defense that's been in the top two or three of the league for a couple of straight years. And for a team that has gone to the playoffs once in the last 2 years, although two in the last 3 years, the defense really doesn't get enough. I've always said this, Brownie, the defense for the Buffalo Bills is fantastic. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic. But it doesn't get the credit it deserves, mostly because, for me, it doesn't make spectacular splash plays a lot. No pick six, you know, it's not, they don't have eight pick sixes on the year. They don't have 97 sacks. They don't have, you know, all these big hitters and these big plays that are going on all over. You know, they're more just solid as a rock, hard to move it on, they seem pretty pedestrian until you look at the stat sheet and the win-loss record. Then they shine pretty big.
And what's interesting about that, Steve, is the fact that Sean McDermott defenses in Carolina were largely known as ones that ranked high in sacks and in takeaways. And the Bills in the 3 years under McDermott have dabbled in being high ranked in those categories, but they haven't been league leaders in those categories. And I wonder if the defense is in a position now to maybe take a step forward in some of those categories, knowing how sacks, if they don't force turnovers, at the very least force punts, because you put offenses in long down and distance situations. Right. And if the secondary and back seven can get to a place where more turnovers are possible with that improved pass rush. I wonder if that's the next step that this defense takes to become more of what Coach McDermott defenses have been in the past, particularly in Carolina.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, taking another step, well, I mean, they're a top defense in the league.
Yeah, they're right there already.
Yeah, all you can do is maybe what grab more attention, you know, get more wins, get more defensive wins, more shutouts, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and one thing that I know a lot of the players harp on in terms of an area where they want to be better is red zone defense in terms of touchdown percentage allowed. They've been around the middle of the league, to close to the edge of the top third. I know they want to be top 10 in that category going forward.
Where they were there last year, top, you know, kind of the top of the top of the middle third or bottom of the top third or whatever, they were way worse than that the year before. So they made great strides to get there. And they knew it, too. In training camp, that's all we heard out of these guys. Yeah. We had Poirier and Hyde on at separate times. They both echoed the exact same sentiment. So interesting stuff there about, you know, a couple of guys that we all know and love here and love and respect here in Buffalo, the safeties for the Bills. Now they're getting some love from maybe some of the analytics websites that cover the league so closely.
And it's reassuring to know Poirier just signed the extension, so he'll be around a while.
Right. All right, now, Brandon, let's do the NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy. Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. There's some true or false stuff we're going to do right here, Brownie. And are you ready for this?
I'm ready. Well, I'm always
seen the
ready,
list. Man. Here we go. All right, here we go. And this is kind of an interesting one. And with the fact that Frank Gore was here last year and has so many yards to his name, there's another guy in the league kind of in the same boat, Adrian Peterson. Will Adrian Peterson pass Barry Sanders for fourth all time on the rushing list? The difference between them is just 1,054 yards is the difference. Adrian Peterson has to get that to take over fourth place all time. Do you think Adrian Peterson's got enough in the tank with the Washington Redskins to do that?
We're saying that that's going to happen this year? Is that true or false?
It says he will pass Barry Sanders with 1,054 yards this season.
Man,
that's a tough over-under right there.
I don't like betting against all day, but man, I'm going to say false, and here's why. I don't think their offensive line is exceptional. They still have a young quarterback who still does not have the full respect of NFL defenses. And so I think, and I'll give it a third example. Ron Rivera is a new coach. I think he does respect what Adrian Peterson can do, but is he going to give him the ball as much as he would need it to get to 1,000 yards? So with all of those unknowns together, I'm going to have to say false. I hate betting against Adrian Peterson, but I'm going to say false.
I'll say false as well. It would require him to gain that 1,054 yards, and he has not been able to gain that many yards since 2015. And this just in, that's 5 years ago, and he is 5 years removed from that.
And not only that, I think there's a lot of other team elements here that are weighing against him that doesn't help his cause. Right. You know, no offseason practices, offensive line that's in a state of flux. They just traded away their best lineman, Trent Williams, who didn't play for him last year either. And the quarterback situation, which is still unfolding, and Dwayne Haskins is still developing as a player. So they're going to load up the box to stop Peterson and force Haskins to beat him. That's going to be the plan every week.
I'll say this, though. Bottle up Peterson first. That's true and all that. But he may be, from a guy like Ron Rivera, Peterson may be the only guy he thinks he can depend on. So he may get a few touches early. But you know this, too.
Yeah, that's valid.
If you go to that, but if you hand it to him enough and nothing's happening, it's going to become pretty evident as to whether he's going to be able to carry along. So we both say false to that. Adrian Peterson, probably we don't think he will pass Barry Sanders. He won't gain 1,054 yards this season. All right, NFL true false number two. Former Buffalo Bills coach Perry Fuel, his new position with supervising officiating is going to help reduce the blunders on the field.
I think we're asking a lot of Perry Fuel with the way that
worded. I'll say this. He's not going to hurt. He's going to help. The more voices they have in there, particularly a guy with Perry Fuel's resume, he's a great position coach. He wasn't very successful as a head coach, but the guy's lights are on. I've spoken with him. He's a really sharp guy. And the more smart people you have in that building, the better it's going to be. Plus, the new rule changes were designed anyway to reduce the blunders and the officiating, particularly with the DPI-OPI review. Now that that's gone, the blunders will be much fewer and much less intrusive. And if you want to give Perry Fuel that credit, I will. So I'll say true.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of Perry. I mean, I remember when he was here on Dick Geron's staff and even took over as interim head coach, you know, after Geron was fired in 2009. But, and I think he'll help. and even Dean Blandino, who we had on the show earlier, talked about how having a football mind, a coach in there as a sounding board is valuable. But to think he's going to help officials reduce blunders on the field, I think you're counting on Perry Fuel to improve officials' execution. He might help their viewpoint on how to officiate. I just don't know if he can do enough to help them reduce their blunders. So I'll say false.
Well, this is interesting, too, because Perry Fuel, when he was announced, he said he acknowledged this, and he said there are roughly 40,000 plays in a typical 256-game regular season. In 2019, 417 plays, or about 1%, required a timeout for referees to review a play. Of those, 196, way less than half, resulted in a reversal of the call on field. Of the 417 reviews, 101, or just under one quarter of those reviewed, involved pass interference plays. And just 24 of those reviews resulted in a calls reversal. So it really is, and you talk about it statistically speaking, it is a minute number of plays that we're talking about as being those ones that are kind of maddening and infuriating for fans.
Yeah, they just stick out horribly.
I know.
And that's why they're remembered so well and
I know.
Draw the ire of fans.
All right, that's right. So we both think Coach Perry Fuel will probably help at the NFL level as officiating supervisor. All right, NFL true false number three. The Cardinals are the best team for the best candidates, I guess, for a worst to first turnaround. The Cardinals of the NFC West are the most primed to be the team that goes from worst to first, meaning in the standings of the NFL.
Yeah. I initially took a look at this, Steve, and I said, ooh, they're the best shot we've got in the entire league. The NFC West is a bear of a division. I think Arizona will be a much improved football team this year completely. I mean, I think they will have a winning record this year. I don't know to what degree, but I do believe they will have a winning record. I think they will be a tough out. I think their offense will be high-flying. DeAndre Hopkins, the most notable addition there. But they play in an awfully tough division. So I started hunting around. I was like, okay, who are the other last-place teams from last
That's
year?
That's right. That's exactly what I'm doing, yeah.
And who's got a better shot at it? And, I mean, I like the Chargers to make a jump this year, but are they leapfrogging Kansas City? No way. No way. Cincinnati, no. Jacksonville, not in that division. I mean, they gutted their team. They're not going to be better. They might be worse. Washington is not in a position to do it. Neither is Detroit. Carolina, too much rebuilding there. So I'm going to say true. I think it is Arizona. I don't think it'll happen, but I think they're the best chance to happen. It's less than 40% in my mind, but they've probably got the best chance at the last place teams you have to choose.
Well, yeah, let's face it, you're not picking the favorites here, right? It's not about picking the best team that's going to do it. It's about picking out of a bunch of bad football teams. I think if I was going to make a case, there's two teams that I would look at. Arizona would be one of them, yes. But if I'm looking at the others of the other seven divisions in the league. The other two that jump out to me are also in the NFC, and it's Carolina and Detroit. Detroit's got a little bit of continuity coming back. Stafford comes back healthy. I like him as a quarterback. I still don't think Detroit's going to have what it takes. I don't think they've got the horses to get there, but Stafford is going to make a difference for them. And that's big. And also Carolina. I think Matt Rhule coming in, you can tell when you talk to him, he's a real leader. And I think there's a chance that he may have the kind of effect on the Carolina Panthers that Sean McDermott did here his first year, where he took a team that some accused of tanking when they made those two or three moves right at the beginning of the season after training camp. They said, oh, they're tanking. And then they end up making the playoffs. I think that's a chance that Matt Rhule has there in Carolina. I like Teddy Bridgewater. I think the team will rally around him offensively. I think without Cam Newton there, Brownie, I think that's it's a little bit of a burden of personality that the team doesn't have to carry around with it, you know, with a quarterback who gets into costume for his post-game press conferences.
Not a fan of that, huh?
I think that takes a little load of distraction and a little bit of off of the team's head. So the new, I don't. Yeah, exactly. So I think all those things are pluses for Carolina, and I would give them a chance. Now, they're in with New Orleans, Tampa Bay, and Atlanta. Yeah. Matt Ryan's been an MVP. New Orleans' Drew Brees is maybe the best prolific passer in NFL history. And who's the other guy at Tampa Bay? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they just got a guy, Tom Brady. You know, that's a tough division for Teddy Bridgewater to bust in. But if you're going to say a team that's got a chance to go way better, I think that may be the reason. Yeah. Because they catch light.
I'd argue your Detroit card before I went Carolina. I just think that NFC South division's too stacked to overcome it. And the NFC North is kind of a murky division. I mean, Green Bay didn't do much to help themselves this offseason. Yes, they still have Rodgers and Devontae Adams, but I don't know if they've got the horses to go 13-3 again this year. And Minnesota, I think they've got good pieces there, but they're kind of a team in transition. They got rid of some of their older players, and they're going to be counting an awful lot on some young players to make it happen for them. And Chicago could be in a quarterback quandary again if Nick Foles doesn't pan out the way they're hoping he can. So Detroit could really make a move there in what is kind of a division in flux, so to speak. So I actually like your Detroit pick better than your Carolina pick.
All right, well, neither one of them is it. I'm not picking a Super Bowl champion. I know
that.
Yeah,
I'm going through with Arizona.
Yeah, all right. Steve Tasker, Chris Brown, we're One Bills. You're with One Bills Live. We'll be right back after this. We've got Pete Bomarito coming on the program. He is the trainer who trains hundreds of professional athletes, thousands of youth and high school athletes. He's working with a bunch of Buffalo Bills players right now. He's coming up right after the break. This is One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, and you're listening to Buffalo Bills Radio.
WGR Sports Radio 550.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card.
Hey, couch surfers, we've got nonstop tunes to keep you rocking while you work.
Oh, and Colleen, yes, you Colleen with a K. Your free trial of Movie Plus ends tomorrow and your card may be charged. Do you want to continue or cancel?
So meet Eno, the Capital One assistant. Eno looks out for surprise charges, like when free trials expire, and helps if you need to fix them. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Limitations apply.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Hi, this is Jay Farner, CEO of Rocket Mortgage. Making the right financial decisions has never been more important. We can help guide you to those right decisions.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.